Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, hope you're all ready for a super Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Tony, my phone is, the hell's gotten into my phone, man. I texted Ozone this morning, Ozier, to make sure he was good to come in. He's going to join us coming up for the next couple of segments here, talk about his experience at the Combine and free agency, franchise tag deadline today and all that good stuff. And I texted him this morning, and it said text failed, did not go through. So at one time, I hit it again, and I hit resend, and okay, let's see if that one goes through. It appears it did. And then it appeared, I texted John, I think I counted 13 times. So
the same text?
Yeah, one of them was the same one, and then I followed up with a, sorry, my phone is out of control, and that one sent several times as well. So I think 13 total texts with the intention of sending two. Is the way it went. So, you know, if you have to communicate with me via the cell phone today, good luck with that. It appears to be on the fritz a little bit here today. Our question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. What you know now, and that's all you know, we don't know who all is going to get the franchise tag, so it's a bit of a fun guessing game on this one today. Who gets your vote as the top free agent target for the Jaguars in 2016? You know, look, Von Miller's not going to be available, right? Doesn't look like Josh Norman will be available, although he says he wants $14 to $15 million. They still haven't tagged him, Tony, in Carolina. Would you pay Josh Norman a contract averaging $15 million? Would you give him 4 years, $60 million, if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Ooh.
It's tough, right?
It's tough.
I mean, he played. He was a candidate for the Defensive Player of the Year this
year. In
the
end, yeah.
Probably,
I would.
He's a proven commodity.
He's a young guy.
Not that young.
Now you feel like your two corner spots are taken care of for a couple of years.
Isn't Josh Norman about 30 years old now, if I'm not mistaken? I think he's a little older than we think he is, if I'm not mistaken. See if we can get a birthday on Josh Norman. Born in 87.
He's
all right,
28.
So, he's 28. He's not that old. 28's fine.
He'll be 29 during the season, December.
Right. I don't think he'll make it to free agency, but I would pay Josh Norman 4 years, $60 million. At the age of 28 right now,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like guys that I haven't even considered.
Right.
It's like the guys that I assumed, that's not going to happen.
And he'll likely get that franchise tag.
It's like Josh Norman and Von Miller and Eric Berry, like those types of guys. I haven't even thought about like the prospect of them coming to Jacksonville because I just assumed there's no way those teams are letting those guys walk. And now here we are, you know, less than 6 hours away from the deadline for these teams to put a franchise tag on them, or free agency is looming. Right? Then
right.
Teams will really start salivating that we're going to get a chance to talk to this guy. At least it feels like, if it doesn't happen by 4 o'clock today. So, we'll see. We'll see with a lot of these guys. Berry, probably the most interesting guy for Jags fans to this point that hasn't had that franchise tag placed on him. What are they doing in Kansas City?
Right. I got to believe that's going to get worked out in Kansas City. Just my gut. But let's do this. Let's step aside. We'll come back. I'll see if John Osier got any of my texts this morning and if he's going to join us here on Jaguars Today. Really looking forward to that visit with Johnny O. He's fresh back from Indianapolis from the NFL Scouting Combine. So we'll get into all that. If you want to get on board while John is here or otherwise, 641-1010. 10 is the phone number. It's also the text line. You can tweet your responses to the question of the day to @MD_1010XL, @1010XL Fat Tony, @1010XL Tyler, or post your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, coming back with John Osier in studio here live at Everbank. Oh, we're back at the stadium as well here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
You used to call me on my cell phone.
Not anymore.
That's right.
We gotcha. I used to text you 16 times trying to communicate one simple plea. Will you come on with us?
Yeah, it was awesome. Morning? I felt like we were dating in high school.
Wow.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't have text when I was in high school.
Yeah,
so.
I did. I'm 27.
Is that what they do? They text each other like interminably, just over and over.
I'm guessing.
Ask Fortunato. He would know about those kind of things. That was unbelievable. It told my phone told me your text failed to send. Would you like to resend it? I said yes. I clicked that once, and you ended up getting 16 texts. I just added
it.
I mean, it was good. Hope you
I
don't get charged
you had a dry
by the
show
text
you needed
received.
Me. No, I do not. I figured you just needed to talk to him.
I did. I was very desperate. I mean, it's me and Tony. We've had about enough of each other already.
I can see that after 7 years.
Yeah, after one day back. He was in Indy, too, last week. One day back. Bruce Irvin, who yesterday Pro Football Talk, I believe, put out a little blind item. One of those we're hearing. Don't be surprised if the Jags are a player for Bruce Irvin.
Pro Football Talk did that?
Yes, they did.
Huh.
Right. Blind item.
Huh.
Right? I don't think you should be surprised. I mean, he makes sense for this defense, and he's got a connection with Gus Bradley, and many have made the connection. He, in fact, had said he'd like to play in Atlanta, where he lives now, although he did say, he tweeted out this morning, back in 80-degree weather, man, I love living in Florida. I think he's originally from Atlanta. And I think he lives in Florida now.
Gotcha.
Take advantage of that no state income tax, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Part of the deal. And so if you want to go tweet at Bruce Irvin, at B Irvin, IV or IRVIN underscore WVU11. He had however many responses, let's say there are 20 responses immediately to it. He only tweeted this out about an hour ago. About 18 of them were from Jaguar fans.
I see that.
Come on down. They're active on the Twitter.
They're enthusiastic a lot.
I love it. You know what? I hope that shows him, because there's like one random one in there, hey, come to the Jets, and one other one, no, don't leave the Seahawks.
Jaguars Twitter will jump on a topic, you know.
I like it. let him help us score some players,
right,
John, as we eagerly await the 4 o'clock deadline to find out who gets franchised today. Olivier Vernon would be a bummer for the Jags. It would be a bummer. We won't know today necessarily with certain guys. Malik Jackson won't get franchised, but will they in the next week be able to work out some kind of long-term deal with him? So there may be a few targets of opportunity, although Tony and I talked about this yesterday. Dave Caldwell said that basically thinks if you don't get tagged this year, there's a high probability you are going to make it to unrestricted free agency.
Yeah, and his theory on that is there's so much money out there that, and so many teams with cap space, that the agent would be thinking. And he said this, I think, Thursday when he spoke to the media. And his point was, if by that point they hadn't re-signed, that the agent would probably be advising the player really strongly, look, you've got 25, 28 teams out there with cap space to spend. Let's see what's out there. It's not a market that is probably that easy for agents to predict, where if you had like five teams with ample cap space, an agent could probably say, look, you're not going to get that good a deal anyway. Let's go back to the team and get this done. So I think that's his thinking on that. I think there'll be a few guys who teams get deals done with late simply because there will be guys who just naturally want to stay with their current team and they get a deal done and they're comfortable with it. But I think he's right. I think if you're not done today, there's probably not going to be an influx of guys re-signing March 4th, 5th, and 6th leading up to that negotiation period.
And something we've talked about.
The discussion period. They can't negotiate. They can discuss.
Non-tampering, right. Whatever they call it.
With free agency, we've talked about this a lot, John. Just the idea of that's not how you want to build a team. It's not how you're going to build a winning team. And there's a lot of guys that become available in free agency that it's kind of a buyer beware situation.
Absolutely.
And I know Dave talked about this last week while he was out at the Combine when he addressed the media up there and when he came on with us here on 1010XL and said that, when you look at what happened with a guy like Julius Thomas last year in Denver, it felt like Denver got squeezed out of being able to re-sign that guy. Like, his price point just went too high for them to be able to handle it.
Right.
And it feels like that could be something that's happening to them again this year, just with the sheer number of guys and the value of the guys that they have. So guys like Malik Jackson, they kind of hold my attention for what the Jags may need out of that position. It's the same thing in Miami. They spent so much money on Ndamukong Suh. Do they want to have that much tied up with Cameron Wake coming off the Achilles and they're still going to have to pay him something? Can they afford to spend that much money and continue to invest in the defensive line? That's why Vernon would become a free agent. It's those types of guys. Mm-hmm. It's why they're as intriguing as they are, because they're getting price pointed out of the spots they're at. They're not good enough to re-sign with those teams.
Yeah, and I think Dave's other point sort of that he mentioned in lockstep with that is, you may want to take a second look at a guy if he's out there and his team has, I'm throwing out a number, $35 million in cap space. if a guy's out there and the team could afford to re-sign him and doesn't, then maybe you take a step back and say, okay, why?
JPP.
Yeah, I mean, and I think
he's got a bad hand, I hear.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of where Dave's head was at when he was talking about free agency last week is, okay, yes, we want to get guys, but we also don't want to go get guys who can't play anymore just because we have cap space. So I think that's always the dilemma that any GM, even a guy with $85 million to spend, wrestles with as he goes into free agency. Now, that said, I think they will be able to get at least a couple of high-impact players. Will they be the guys that we're talking about? I don't know that.
Right. We don't know who they're going to be. But, you know, we can kind of speculate on what makes sense, certainly. And I think one of the positions maybe we're overlooking a little bit is cornerback. Mm-hmm. You know, Tremaine Johnson has kind of grown on me throughout this discovery process, let's call it, over the last few weeks. But now there's some talk that he may get the franchise tag from the Rams.
That's what it sort of felt like last night when I was putting my chart together. But yeah.
Right. And it's interesting because Janoris Jenkins fired his agent, right? Mm-hmm. And by NFLPA rules, he cannot hire another one for 5 days. It's a cooling off period, so some agent can't sweet talk you into ripping up your deal and signing the very next day and taking advantage of, you know, making the commission on your next contract or whatever.
They wouldn't do
that. Of course they would. So Janoris Jenkins, the feeling is, well, now the only way to keep him would be to franchise him because you can't really negotiate. So the Rams, I don't know if they have enough time or are able to get something done with Tremaine Johnson and then maybe franchise Jenkins and keep both of their starting corners there. But I think one of them would be attractive. I think Sean Smith out of Kansas City. If they can't work out a long-term deal with Eric Berry and they have to use a franchise tag, that's part of the interesting part that we're going to have to watch for today. It's not only who gets tagged, right, but then who that – it just by default makes that player available from the same team.
Right, and that's where Sean Smith comes in to the point. You know, I think that's where Sean Smith comes in. Can they franchise Eric Berry and then turn around and perhaps because they know that structure, can they go ahead and get something done with Sean Smith? Maybe the same sort of thing with Von Miller and Malik Jackson. I don't think it's quite as easy as that in Denver. I think a corner makes a lot of sense. As you keep hearing, you know, or you get a sense that they would like to add 5-6 guys in free agency on some capacity. If that's the case, then you look, okay, well, if free safety pass rush is what we're all talking about, and then offensive guard or center, whatever, however that plays out with that position, well, that's three. Well, maybe complimentary running back if they've gotten money and there's a guy out there that makes sense. We're still sitting at four. Well, a cornerback to me makes a lot of sense because I thought Colvin played better at that spot than some people believe over there. But I think ideally you wouldn't have him switching from nickel to outside, from nickel to outside. And if you got a corner to put opposite house and could play Aaron where he's really, really good, which is at nickel corner – that's the sort of move that you want to make to add depth, to add talent to an already, I think, pretty good spot.
And Smith fits that profile. He's like 6'3", 6'3".
Right,
and
sure.
A half.
Well, you've got to have three. Right now they have two.
Yeah.
Sure.
And corner,
that they really, really trust.
Corner is one of the few spots it feels like in free agency there's more than just, okay, it's Olivier Vernon or bust. Right, at the pass rush spot, it feels like.
Guys.
Right, there's Malik Jackson or bust, kind of at that defensive tackle spot right now. It feels like corner and maybe quarterback, although the Jags aren't in that market, but corner feels like there's a list of 5 or 6 guys that if they get any of these, you feel like they are really improving what they can do in the secondary.
Right, and I completely agree with that. And it's one, again, where people, when they're looking at needs, you tend to look at the depth chart. So you say, well, Colvin and House, and okay, well, let's go over to free safety. We feel like they have a weakness. But in this day and age, you really need 15, 16, 17 guys on defense to feel strong in all your packages. Well, one of those places that you don't feel strong is at that third corner, whether you put him outside, whether you put him in nickel. Once you take and you add a player to the Colvin-House combination right now, you don't feel that strong. So adding a player there, that's where they can use this cap space to get significantly better, even beyond safety, even beyond pass rushing end.
All right, our question of the day, so I'll give you a few minutes to think about this, is, you know, based on what we know at this moment, with still hours to go before the deadline to franchise tag some of these guys. So, for instance, Olivier Vernon may not be a reasonable target anymore after 4 o'clock this afternoon. But as things stand right now, who do you think the Jags' top target, who would you vote that either should be or will be? They're two different things. They can be, but they might be the same answer for you. Who should be their top target, and who do you think will be one of their top targets? And I don't think top target means necessarily the guy you sign first, although sometimes it is. You know what I mean? Just a guy that they feel like, wow, no matter if it stretches out for a day or two or whatever the case, we really feel like this is a key piece to our all-season puzzle. So we'll get to that.
Why don't you text me that 13 times? I'll think about it over
16. Break. 16 right. is what I will do. And also we'll get your thoughts about the week in Indianapolis and what you saw at the NFL Scouting Combine. He's John Osier. I know that because he finally showed up after I texted him all these many times this morning. From Jaguars.com, the senior writer. He's here with us for another 15 minutes or so. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. You can pass your questions along that way or at the same number on the text line. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, 43 years ago today, Dark Side of the Moon came out, which coincides perfectly with the talk of all these free agents about to get rich. All that money, it's going to be rained down upon them.
Does a little bit.
A little bit. 43 years ago today, so says Tyler, who we count on to come up with these historical facts for us.
It was one of those albums on that list a couple weeks ago. You pop quizzed me on like the...
Oh, the best-selling albums of all time?
Yeah, it was like the albums that it sold... I can't remember how many copies
it was. A ridiculous amount.
It was like 10 million, I want to say.
It might have been 15 million.
Yeah.
But it used to be that stat that it was on like one of these charts.
Forever.
Forever. Yeah,
ever since it came out, basically. It never left like the top 100 or something like that. Might have been top 200. I don't know what it was.
Just like every kid born when I was born, I went through my Pink Floyd phase. Yeah.
Is it a phase?
Still in it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's. Yeah. I mean, Pink Floyd's as good today is any time you've ever
heard
of it.
Like when Tyler told us it's 43 years ago today, I was like, I listened to it on the plane on the way home this weekend. I listened to Dark Side of the Moon all the way through, just sitting on the plane.
You're a true American badass.
That's not what that story was meant for. But it's a fantastic album. It's one of the all-timers.
No doubt.
Something just fell out of the ceiling.
Did it fall out of the ceiling?
I was watching something just
fell. Did it come close to hitting me?
No, it was all the way in the corner.
Did it look like it would have hurt had it hit me?
There's a guy up there.
I couldn't tell if it was water or like just a piece of ceiling tile or something.
I'm thinking lawsuit right now is what I'm thinking, John. I don't have any grounds yet for that. But
one more thing falls out, I'm moving my chair over.
I'm going to hang out. As, Tony and I, the shtick we used all week was that they're putting our brand new Jaguars custom embossed Lazy Boys in the studio for us, and that's why we had to spend
time.
Yeah,
I never bought that, by the way.
Yeah, you didn't think it was that? They were not convincing in that?
No.
All right.
It took us 3 years to get a TV.
They've got some roof issues.
Put in the Lazy Boys.
They've got some roof issues is what they have here in the studio. But
it's all part of the renovation.
They're working on them. Right. It's all part
it's
of
all
the
fan experience.
As long as your club seats have a good view, that's all that matters. You don't concern yourself with where JP, Tony, and I will be toiling on game day.
Nobody does.
No, nor should you. Now, you were toiling. We'll get to the question of the day coming up. But up in Indianapolis, from your perspective, I know you covered a lot of the top prospects, even ones that didn't necessarily have a fit with the Jags, such as the quarterbacks. But who did you think – look, because every year they say the combines is such a small percentage of this, and then every year a couple of guys throw eye-popping numbers in either direction, good or bad, unanticipated – and their stock goes shooting up or sliding back down. So, in your opinion, who helped themselves the most this week?
Well, I'm not sure if it's helped themselves, but I don't think they hurt themselves as much as people want to make out. Boza and Spence. I mean, everybody was all over Boza because of the 40 time. And yet, you know, and I don't want to play a combine guy here, but...
Play combine guy.
His quickness measures, meaning the cone drills... were fine. All the other measurements were fine. I can't imagine that 40 time at the combine is going to dramatically hurt Boza's stock Will it hurt Spence's stock? I don't know if that's so much as packaging it with the off-field stuff. That might give teams an excuse to pass on him in the top 10, but I've still got to think Spence is a first-round pick.
I would agree with that he's likely a first-round pick. I think his stock shot up probably more than it should have after the Senior Bowl, you know, because
you heard guys talking. I mean, people I talked to at the Combine still think he is an elite pass rusher.
Well, and that may be. I mean, some people describe him as even after the Combine, I think Pete Prisco called him the best pass rusher in the draft. In his mock draft, he still has him going top 10. But it was interesting to see, because I do think the perception was that Bosa didn't hurt himself much, because if you really get into the draft Nick side of things, he's known for great strength, great technique, plays with leverage, plays with a lot of effort,
right.
And he isn't necessarily, and like you said, he had the quickness measurables in there. Okay, maybe he can't run you down from 40 yards as well as some other defensive linemen will be able to do. That's such a small impact there.
It's nice when it happens, but you know, you're not going to make your living doing that.
Whereas Spence, I think, was seen as more of an elite athlete at the position, and that's why the 40 time, even though they're very similar 40 times, you're like, well, why does one guy not lose any stature from this, and the other guy seems to take it?
And he has a chance to make it up at the pro day. I mean, that's the plus about running at the combine, of course, is you have your pro day. If it is an outlier, you can make up for it.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see if he does that.
What did you make of Robert Kimdichie, who physically has everything you'd want, but, boy, I just thought, what a questionable choice to throw his teammate Laramie Tunsil publicly under the bus. Even if he's telling teams this, even if teams are aware that Laramie Tunsil may have been there. I just thought it was a bad look.
It was interesting. I was not around the podium for that. I was writing. I pat myself on the back there. But certainly when you read the transcript, and as soon as it happened, you kind of heard people talking about it. Yeah, it's a bad look, and it does make you wonder, you know, what's going on between those two. It just raises all sorts of, what? And that's not really what you want if you're a draft pick. You don't want people saying, what?
My guess, and Tony and I talked about this yesterday, is that he may in fact have been there, and Kandichi's like, why am I getting all the crap here? He was here too, and by that connection, you can assume, well, there's a lot of pot smoking in the room. Wasn't me. Laramie was here. Oh, yeah, but I'm the one who fell out the window. That's why you're getting the attention, dude. You fell out of a window.
Yeah, it's hard when you fall out the window not to have that. You know, I haven't fallen out that many windows, but it usually draws
that attracts
attention.
The attention.
Sure.
I find. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010. Out on the west side, we've got Touchdown Brown calling in.
Why not?
Always a treat. Good morning, Touchdown Brown.
Hey, how you doing today? Hey, I just wanted to wish you guys a great day. Just get right to it. Hey, look, I'm a diehard Baltimore Ravens fan. My son's a diehard Jag fan, and like I said, I love my son. And one thing I like to say, I was watching Draft Day the other day, and make a long story short, and I just didn't feel that I was right, that they made us look like fools right there, that Jacksonville Jaguars can draft and stuff. If you saw, you've probably seen the movie and stuff. But my thing is this, I think that we got a exciting offense, and we got some young guys, and I think that we need, I guess this is T.J. Yeldon, but I just think that their performance last year, I watched it on YouTube of Ezekiel Elliott against Alabama. He put about 260 or 2-something. I know. It was over 200 yards against the same defensive guys who are in the top 25 this year. The same line. They didn't change from last year. Not a single one of them. Linebackers, defensive line, the same guys that were defense last year. That's who he ran over right here. The same was shutting out Clemson this year or whatever. They had a defense. I just think he should come to Jacksonville. That's his motto. I know we got a corner and I know defense, but I just think that if we can just have that element, those running backs and then those receivers, and we got a good tight end, we can do something. Because, like I said, we didn't lose by much last year on some of the games. And, like I said, that's just me. So,
all right. Well, we appreciate the opinion. Thank you, Touchdown Brown. Let me say, typically when Tony and I get calls,
Touchdown
about
Brown's going to have a frown on draft day.
I think. Well, if he's hanging his hat on Ezekiel Elliott coming here,
touchdown
he
frown.
Yeah, very nice. most of the calls we get about running backs are about Derrick Henry, and should the Jags consider him in the second round of the draft? Tony and I think that there's a. I would say right now, I would bet better than 50-50, he's not around in the second round. I think he's going to slide in the first round, and some team is going to take him. But
probably.
Putting that aside, I just think overall, first of all, they like T.J. Yeldon. I think they want him to be the centerpiece. They want to find a complimentary back. If you didn't feel like he was up to snuff, why not go out and get Doug Martin? Right? I mean, Doug Martin's a proven guy in the National Football League.
Well, even if you do think he's up to snuff, if you're looking for what the caller is talking about, which is a bam-bam, 1-2 punch, why not do it in free agency?
Right, and that's my thing.
And yourselves to get that. I just think what they want out of the draft, they want to have young guys who can run on defense. And I think that's what they want to do in free agency, get everything that they can take care of is in terms of what we're talking about, needs, and draft to be able to run and start coming at you in waves on defense.
I don't disagree with that, all right? But I think you don't draft a guy, let's say Ezekiel Elliott, if the Jags were going to get him, barring a modest trade down, they'd have to take it with the fifth pick because everyone says he's going to be off the board in the first round, maybe in the top 10 when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
So if you're drafting a running back at that spot, well, you're turning over the running game to that guy. You're not bringing him in to be part of a 1-2 punch, right? The Rams didn't draft Todd Gurley to split equal time with Trey Mason last year.
Yeah, I can't imagine a scenario where they take running back in the first round.
Oh, no, I can't either. Right. But, you know, what about let's assume Derrick Henry's sitting there in the second round for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't either. But
no, because I think they're going to address it in free agency.
Me too.
But even so, how much equity do you want to put in terms of draft equity, do you want to put in the running back position? That would be 2 out of 6 premium picks over a 2-year period, meaning 2 second-round draft picks at the running back position. You know, I don't
maybe
think
two
Dave
out of
does
your
it.
Top four is
sure.
What
well, yeah, I mean,
I got what you're saying.
If you're saying your premium picks are rounds 1, 2, 3, all of a sudden you're investing 2 premium picks in 2 years. I don't think that's the direction Dave goes.
No, I don't
at that
either.
Position, which is a devalued position.
Is there a running back on the market or likely to be on the market that you think fits the bill specifically for the Jaguars?
You know, maybe I don't know they're willing to spend this much to get Miller. I mean, all these guys are names.
What do you think they need in the running game to complement T.J. Yeldon? Do they need more of a pounder, or they need a guy with home run ability?
See, to me, that doesn't matter. Obviously, the home run ability would be great because you've almost got that in Denard, but he just hasn't shown that he can do it consistently enough, especially last year last year turned into sort of a disaster at the end. So I don't think you can trust that. I think they like the pounder that they've got in Jonas Gray, but I think just overall you need another guy who can run. I don't think the style matters as much as having another guy that you can turn to, that you can trust. If in the NFL you're going to have the running back is going to be down for a certain period of time usually. So as long as you've got a guy where TJ doesn't have to play every series, every snap, I'm not sure the style matters as much. Would it be great to have a short yardage guy? Sure. But have a guy who can complement no matter what the style is.
Chris Ivory's the guy for me. He really is. You look at him, the last 3 years, he had 182, 198, 247 carries. He's not going to be a 300-carry guy if he comes here, right?
Right.
His entire career is average at a minimum 4.1 yards per carry, and he is a short yardage guy. So, you know, you figure he gets goal line carries, that's going to knock that number down a little bit. So he's been 4.6 for his career in 6 years, doesn't have a ton of wear and tear on his body, and I'd be willing to pay that guy a few million bucks to come in here. And really, they talk about wanting to run even when the other team knows it's coming, right? And obviously, they got to beef up the line a little bit as well, but I think that would be a good fit here in Jacksonville. All right, so the question of the day was this, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Who do you vote for as the Jags' top target in free agency? Knowing what you know now, give us the one name that should top the list.
Well, assuming Barry is going to be off.
Okay.
Then I kind of think Vernon's going to be off too. If not Vernon, and I also like the idea of Sean Smith. I like the idea of a corner.
So you think then if Vernon and Barry are off, Sean Smith moves to the top of the list for you?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sort of saying that because obviously free safety, Weddle's going to be out there, and I'd be surprised if they don't make a huge play at free safety for whoever their top guy is.
And then we don't know who their top guy is. Right. You know, Tony Pauline, a draft insider, posted an item during the combine that said, from what he's hearing, the market for Weddle's not going to be all that great, actually. You know, he was asking around, and, you know, he didn't have a great year, but the question is he deteriorating in skill? Was it because things got so bad? You know, right. There was a lot of bad blood between himself and the Chargers to the point where they put him on IR, where he claimed he was healthy at the end of the season because they were just done with him and he was done with them. So we'll keep an eye out for it and keep an eye out for that deadline. What do you have coming up on Jaguars.com?
We will be Jaguars.com live tomorrow. Right now, I'm sort of planning the week.
How about that?
I'm still sort of getting into it, and
we'll text me if
we'll
anything
see.
Comes up.
I will. I'll text you 17 times.
Excellent. John Osier of Jaguars.com, the senior writer in here with us on Jaguars today. Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. Check out Jaguars.com for all the latest on news that could impact the free agency landscape for guys that your Jags could be interested in. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back this date in football on the Honda Drive around the NFL next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. What happened on this date in football history? Well, I don't know what the NFL did for the first, 15-20-odd years, Tony, but in 1941, Elmer Layden became the first commissioner of the National Football League. They were rudderless before that, I assume, and going back to 1941, the first commissioner in the NFL was named. Birthdays for this date, how about 1946, Elvin Bethea, 8-time Pro Bowler. He played in an era as a defensive end where sacks were not an official statistic until the very tail end of his career. But 8 times in the Pro Bowl gets you in the Hall of Fame, and he was inducted in 2003. Mike Rozier, former Jacksonville Bull, had probably his best professional season as a Jacksonville Bull, as a matter of fact. Heisman Trophy winner with Nebraska in 1983, part of the unbeatable Cornhuskers that, of course, the Miami Hurricanes took down in the championship game back then. A 2-time Pro Bowler in the NFL after starting out the first 2 years in the United States Football League. Stephen Davis, born on this date, the former Auburn running back, and I still, despite 3 Pro Bowls, 3 1,400-yard seasons Stephen Davis had, Tony.
Yeah.
First thing I always think of when I hear his name is Michael Westbrook knocking him out at practice, sucker punching him, and it's a shame. Stephen Davis was a hell of a player. He turns 42 years old, and happy 53rd birthday to Jaguar offense coordinator Greg Olsen for his 10th birthday. Pink Floyd released Dark Side of the Moon for him. Congratulations to Greg Olsen for making it to 53 and for helping the Jaguars offense take a meteoric jump from where they were just 1 year prior to him arriving in Jacksonville. That's this date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, maybe you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office for any dental needs at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Houston Texans wide receiver Jalen Strong was arrested late on Sunday night for possession of marijuana after a traffic stop in Scottsdale, Arizona. Strong was riding in the car with Packers cornerback Demarius Randall when they were pulled over for not having a visible license plate. Randall was driving the car. Strong then admitted that he was in possession of some marijuana without a medical permit to carry in Arizona and was arrested. Randall and the other passenger, Brayon Colley, were released at the scene. Texans general manager Rick Smith released the following statement regarding the incident, quote, "We are disappointed in the choices Jalen made to put himself in this situation. We will have no further comment at this time." The Chicago Bears have placed the non-exclusive franchise tag on wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, meaning that other teams can negotiate with Jeffrey, but if they get a deal done, it will include 2 first-round picks going to the Bears in compensation. Jeffrey, under the wide receiver franchise tag, will be guaranteed $14.6 million in 2016 if another team doesn't sign him or if the Bears and Jeffrey don't come to terms on a long-term deal. Today at 4 p.m. is the deadline for teams to use the franchise or transition tags. the name most Jaguars fans will be watching in that regard is Miami's Olivier Vernon. The Dolphins, according to Pro Football Talk, had not decided as of last night whether or not to tag Vernon and may not make that decision until right at the deadline this afternoon. Other players of note that could be receiving the tag today, Chiefs safety Eric Berry and Broncos pass rusher Von Miller, who reportedly the two sides are trying to get a long-term deal done, but the odds of it getting done in the next 5 hours right now, probably not very good.
Probably not, but there's always that chance, and let's hope that they don't get it done in the next 5 hours. You don't want any of these teams that are potentially tagging players to have the flexibility to get the contract done, because then they can apply that tag to somebody that you had more realistic hopes of targeting yourself in free agency. Tony, couple of things. One, we just mentioned in this date in football that Elmer Layden was first commissioner of the National Football League. Ocho Fisho tweets us that that first commish was one of Notre Dame's four horsemen of the apocalypse. I did not know that, and so I looked it up. I will give you a dollar if you can, a dollar for each of the other three that you can name.
I got nothing
off the top of your head. A shiny silver dollar, Tony.
Nothing.
That would be Harry Stuhldreher. Okay, Don Miller, Jim Crowley, and the aforementioned Elmer Layden could have swept the board for three additional dollars.
You could ask me that tomorrow, and again, I have no idea.
What, not even Stuhldreher? Come on, man, that's unbelievable. And then this one on Twitter a moment ago as well from Kevin Walsh, who said, you could put Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, et cetera, behind this offensive line. They wouldn't rush for 1,000 yards, and follow that up with a tweet that simply said, wake up. I guess we didn't realize that the offensive line wasn't the best in the National Football League, Tony. T.J. Yeldon played 12 games and was okay as a rookie, right? He wasn't spectacular.
He was
okay.
Fine.
Ran for 740 yards, right? 10 more yards, and that would work out to, over a 16-game season, exactly 1,000 yards. 1,000 yards is not that high a threshold.
No.
In today's game. I think the Jaguars are quite capable, even with the offensive line, the pieces that they have to choose from right now, capable of producing a 1,000-yard rusher, particularly with this passing game, right? I mean, particularly with the fact that you got to concern yourself with the ball going over the top of the defense.
If you guys had to guess how many 1,000-yard rushers there were this year, how many would you guess?
I was going to say 13.
I was going to say the exact same number. So we'll go with 13.
Almost half that, 7.
Really? Only 7?
Adrian Peterson, 1,500 yards. Yeah. Doug Martin, 1,400. Then he dropped down to 1,100 with Gurley, McFadden, Ivory, and Latavius Murray. And rounding out the 1,000-yard rushers, Devontae Freeman.
Who just missed the cut?
Just missing the cut was Jonathan Stewart. He was like 11 yards short. About 30 yards short was Frank Gore. D'Angelo got really close, even though he didn't play the whole year. Forte
right, so you,
just
you
missed
take-
it.
If Le'Veon Bell's healthy, Le'Veon Bell goes over 1,000 yards. If Jamaal Charles is healthy, Jamaal Charles goes over 1,000 yards. I think if Matt Forte's healthy the whole year, what did Matt Forte end up with?
Forte had 898. He was 11th in the league.
And keep me, he missed a few games. Jeremy Langford played for him. So, you know, you had some circumstances that probably kept that number.
Thomas Rawls was almost a 1,000-yard rusher. He rushed for 830.
And how many games were Thomas Rawls' numbers put up?
He played in...
He didn't play in all that many. Like he may have
13.
Played 13 games. I'm sure some of those were just partial games where he had just a smattering
Let's
of
go
carries.
Look at his game log here.
He only had 6 games above 16 carries, or double-digit carries, that is. 6 games of double-digit...
6 games with double-digit carries, right. So, I still contend that even though only 7 made it last year, I think a lot of that was due to circumstance and injury, part of the equation.
I think it points to as well in the league where we were just talking about with John Osier, the Jags wanting to get that other running back for a 1-2 punch, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, all right, Yeldon's our go-to back and this other guy's the backup. They feel like it does need to be a 1-2 thing. I think the idea that there are just 7 to 10 guys in the league that are rushing for 1,000 yards, when we just talked about it, it's not that difficult to get to that threshold, that's the way the league works right now.
Right.
That teams really are, they have 1A and 1B when it comes to the running back situation in most cities around the National Football League right now, and I think the Jags look at what they have available to them and want to have that same kind of deal. And I get the feeling, like John, that it's probably going to get done in free agency. I don't think they want to spend a draft pick on running back. I don't think they want to. I think they would if they had to. Somewhere in the middle rounds, draft a running back that they feel like could complement a guy like T.J. Yeldon. But my sense is that they want to sign somebody in free agency to come in and be the other guy in that backfield, that it won't be Denard Robinson in 2016.
You tell me who are these you think are plausible targets for the Jaguars among the free agent running backs, Tony. Matt Forte.
I don't think he's going to come to Jacksonville.
I don't either.
I think they would target him, but I don't think he's coming.
I agree.
Here.
I don't think, and I read something today that Matt Forte likely won't command more than $3 million on the open market. Matt Forte, I think, is going title chasing, right?
And me too.
Whether that's New England or Green Bay, he's going to go to a team like that. It's a perennial contender in his eyes. So, Joik Bell.
No.
I don't think any interest, right?
I
think he's a marginal guy. He's had some skills. But way too many injuries catching up with him. He's 29 years old. Chris Ivory.
Yeah.
He's perfect to me. I think he's the guy they should be going after. I don't think he's just going to be handed the starting job necessarily in the National Football League. Reggie Bush.
No, injury problems are way too big.
30 years old, I've got no interest in Reggie Bush. Doug Martin, probably pricing himself out.
He probably pricing himself out, but I think they do have some interest in that.
Do you? You think they? Because he's looking for like $7 to $8 million. You think they'd play in that range? They wouldn't. They were uncomfortable going that direction for DeMarco Murray last year.
I think, but they were in on DeMarco Murray, and if DeMarco's price had come down, which it didn't, obviously, he went to Philadelphia and got the money he wanted. I'm curious to see if the market for Doug Martin is what he thinks it's going to be, right? And if that number does have to come down, a running back in today's NFL asking for $8 million a year, good luck to you.
Bilal Powell.
No.
I kind of like Bilal Powell.
I just don't see it.
Okay. What about him? I mean, he's a very good receiver.
Yeah.
So as a second running back, you kind of look for that sometimes.
Sometimes, but I think T.J. Yeldon is the kind of receiving back for this team. I think they look at T.J. Yeldon as a potential third down back for the team. They're looking for something else out of that.
James Starks.
Yeah, I like Starks.
He gets hurt a lot.
He does, but his price should come down because he does.
You realize James Starks is 30 years old?
Is he really?
Doesn't seem like he should be 30 years old, right? He seems
hasn't
he should
played
be like
enough.
26
right.
or something like that. Lamar Miller.
Yeah.
It depends on that price, right?
Yeah,
I think
kind
Lamar
of the Martin
Miller's
thing
looking
too.
To get paid, too.
Yeah, it's kind of that Martin thing again, but yeah, I think they'll be in on both those guys.
I'd be surprised ultimately if they play in the same sandboxes where these guys are looking to get paid. Alfred Morris.
Yeah.
I'm just not an Alfred Morris fan.
I know you're not, but that's a guy who, I mean, he was a 1,500-yard rusher a couple years
ago. I understand.
Just a guy that can soak up carries. Sure. I'm not saying that he's the guy that I would prefer they sign. If they sign him, would I be okay with him being the other back? Yeah. Alfred Morris, I'd be okay with it.
You start to get down to like LeGarrette Blount, Ronnie Hillman.
Hillman I like.
Hillman's interesting at 24 years old. As a true complimentary type piece, he would be an interesting
one. Yeah, there would be no waves made as far as what his role would be.
Right. Right, if he's coming in into a circumstance like that, which, who knows, if Denver wants him back, he may find himself right back in a place where he's very comfortable playing as well.
What did Hillman do this year?
He did all right. You know, he had his moments. It was kind of like 1-1A with he and C.J. Anderson as to who was the more effective back at any given time.
Hillman rushed for 863 yards, 4.2 a carry with seven touchdowns.
And handled some goal line work, too. Which,
and, yeah, CJ was very similar. 4.7 a carry for 730.
Right. I think CJ Anderson's the better back. I was really surprised that CJ Anderson couldn't get it going earlier this season, as a matter of fact, and would expect him to be given the shot to be the so-called feature back in Denver this year. There are definitely some out there. You don't have to spend top dollar. I don't expect him to spend in the Doug Martin price bracket. That's me. We'll see how it all turns out. Question of the day is this. On Super Tuesday, who do you vote to be the Jags' top target in free agency? Knowing what we know right now, don't know for sure who will get the franchise tags today, but based on what you know up to this moment, what is your best guess for that? Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, or post your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll take a look at a couple of fresh mock drafts when we return. In a moment, it's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Are we finished?
Done.
All right, we move along on this Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Combine over with, a week away from free agency. Franchise tag deadline coming up later on this afternoon. And sure Jaguar fans have their eyes and ears peeled.
Brian Anger
is available. Brian Anger, you think a possibility franchise?
A worthy candidate, right? Huh?
Which way are we going to go with that? Oh, are you kidding me? How do you let that guy escape? Right? Can't let the entire, what would it be, the 2012 draft class walk out the door, Tony? That would be just a damn shame. I don't think it's a mortal lock that Brian Anger is not back, but I don't think it's a priority. They don't bring him back. Obviously, they'll be in the market to create some punter competition here in Jacksonville. Pretty obvious. Got a couple of cuts we want to play you that show you the differing of opinions that we get on NFL draft prospects.
Sure.
And this is from yesterday on Mike and Mike on ESPN Radio, starting with Bill Polian. Bill Polian was on in a segment. We all know who Bill Polian is, longtime GM of the Colts and the Bills and la-di-da-di-da. Hall of Famer now, too, right? He just got in the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
right?
He did.
Louis Riddick, draft analyst for ESPN as well, weighing in. This is Polian. We'll start with him talking about Joey Bosa's 40 time and vertical leap and how he sees them as red flags.
You expect him to run in the 4.7s, and he didn't do it. So it's a bit of a red flag. The vertical jump was 32. The combination makes the red flag a little brighter. Joey Bosa's not disappearing from draft boards because he had these numbers. What the numbers tell you, if they held up, was that he's not a terribly explosive player such as Ziggy Ansah, for example, with the Detroit Lions, or the great outside linebackers from the Denver Broncos. That's all. He's still a very good football player.
Okay. I don't think that's anything too over the top, but
no.
I think it's reasonable. You got to, all right, take a look here and then stop telling us that it's all about the tape, because this tape is very good. And so I don't know how big of a red flag this could possibly be. But regardless, that was Bill Polian's opinion on Joey Bosa's draft stock. This is Louis Riddick's opinion.
And on tape, did anybody have any problems with his lower body explosiveness, with his hand use, with his ability to run down quarterbacks and ball carriers on the perimeter? No. So now all of a sudden, because he didn't run in the low 4.7s, does that mean, oh, man, you know, we need to start knocking his grades down? No, you don't.
All right. So Louis Riddick is a strict fundamentalist when it comes to the tape, right? Somebody sent me a
link. Sounds like it, yeah.
By the way, in an email, Tony, it's from Matt Miller, sent this yesterday, as a matter of fact. With the combine results from Joey Bosa and J.J. Watt, right? Just to compare the numbers. And J.J. Watt, can we agree, Duval Doom aside, J.J. Watt's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
Phenomenal athlete.
Yes.
Right? Eye-popping athlete. Here are the comparable combine numbers for Joey Bosa and J.J. Watt. We'll go with the 20-yard shuttle. Each ran the 20-yard shuttle in 4.21 seconds. Okay, I don't know if the 20-yard shuttle is the most important thing, but it shows short area change of direction, right?
Sure.
Okay, so identical marks in that. The three-cone drill, J.J. Watt was a 6.88-second three-cone drill. Joey Bosa was a 6.89, 1/100th of a second, for all intents and purposes, identical three-cone drill. So basically now they have had identical marks on two consecutive workouts. The next one, we'll look at the broad jump. Joey Bosa, J.J. Watt, each put up 120-inch broad jumps. That would be 10 feet exactly, right? So 10-foot broad jump, absolutely identical. Let's go to the 40-yard dash, where Joey Bosa, now albeit lighter than J.J. Watt, they've got him listed at 275 pounds. Let me see what they have Watt listed at here. They had Watt listed at 290, so a heavier J.J. Watt. But nonetheless, in the 40-yard dash, Joey Bosa ran, by most accounts, a disappointing 4.86. J.J. Watt ran a 4.84. Now, again, he's 15 pounds bigger, so that's a better, you know, conversion time, but basically an identical time in the end, right? You're a little bit bigger, but we're going to get to the same spot at about the same time in a full-out sprint, where J.J. Watt bested Joey Bosa was in the bench press, where he did 10 more reps. Bosa did 24 to Watt's 34. It's somewhat, you know, you need that functional strength. You need to be able to, both offensive and defensive linemen, need to be able to, you know, have that ability to extend your arms and get that blocker or the pass rusher off of you and create space between you and that player. So I'm not saying it's completely.
Well, that would be more 34 is exceptional,
right?
Strength, and 24 is adequate.
Pretty much right, yeah. Right where you're like, okay, not a bad showing. And then you've got the vertical leap, where we know J.J. Watt's one of the best pass blockers, batter downers in the National Football League. Joey Bosa had a 32-inch vertical, and J.J. Watt had a 37-inch vertical. So not all. I mean, the freakish strength of J.J. Watt, yes, check. A little bit more explosive on the vertical jump, check. And for his size, a little bit faster than Bosa. The rest of it, you know, again, you can factor in the size on all these things, but they're not that far off the mark. J.J. Watt just seems like, when you look at him, 290, he may be much bigger than that now. You know, the guy's so massive to be able to move the way he does. I think it's that combination. I don't think Bosa presents that to you, but it's not like it's completely out of left field, not completely out of the ballpark. I'm not saying anyone should expect him, based on those numbers, to give you 90% of the production that J.J. Watt's gotten.
It's what you see on tape is what Joey Bosa is, right? And I don't think anything that he didn't disappoint, in my mind, at the combine. It's Joey Bosa.
Kind of who you thought he would be.
Right.
Maybe a tenth slower in the 40.
Right, which to me doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot from a defensive end. That doesn't matter to me.
How much, by the way, you want to bet Joey Bosa runs a sub 4.8 at the Ohio State program?
They're going to figure out a way to make that happen.
I would have a feeling. Yes.
I got a feeling they're going to figure out a way to make that happen. But
the
look,
38-yard dash.
You got enough tape on Joey Bosa that you know what he is as a player. Right, like you know what he is as a player. There's a guy like Noah Spence where there are serious questions about what he is as a player because he had his most productive season at Eastern Washington, right? Or Eastern Kentucky. That's where the questions come in for that guy, is that, okay, does that match up? And really the questions about Noah Spence to me coming out of the combine are more about what you hear about what he said in interviews and how teams feel about him coming out of the interview process, more so than anything he did on the field. I think that matters more for Noah Spence than anything else he's going to do during this process. What he says, how he handles what happened for him getting kicked out of the Big Ten, is the biggest part of the evaluation process for him. Joey Bosa is a top five prospect because we got 3 years of tape on Joey Bosa dominating the Big Ten. That's why he's a top five prospect in this draft, because you have him in a national championship run wreaking havoc on the offensive lines of Alabama. You have him doing that. You have that on tape. That's why Bosa is the prospect he is. None of the numbers that I saw at the combine this week makes me go, now, wait a minute, did I really see him dominate the way I thought I saw him dominate? No. None of that does that for me. If it does it for some team, I hope it's one picking in front of Jacksonville. That's the way I feel about it. I hope that it is Tennessee and Dallas and San Diego that are going, now, wait a minute, on Joey Bosa running a 4.8 40. Let them do it, and let Jacksonville be the beneficiaries of it.
A couple of other items here. One, Pete Prisco updated his mock draft over the weekend with a lot of the combine influence already in there. I'm anxious to see what Rob Rang and Dane Brugler do over at CBS as a follow-up to what they've done leading up to the combine. But Pete's top five right now, Laramie Tunsil at one. That's pretty much unanimous across the board. Pete's got Jared Goff in as the quarterback of choice for Cleveland, and I heard some stuff that made me think that would be the case, but also everyone is gushing about Carson Wentz and the upside right now, so who really knows? So quarterback going number two. Pete has DeForest Buckner in at number three. We mentioned that earlier, that could be an intriguing wild card in the top five. Jalen Ramsey, he has going to the Dallas Cowboys, and then that would leave the Jags with the choice of Joey Bosa, also leaving with the choice of Miles Jack if they opted to go that way. Pete's got Miles Jack going to the Giants. Others, who was it here? Brugler had him going 11th to Chicago, and I'm looking to see where Rang had Miles Jack. And is he? I may have gone right past. I must have gone right past. It couldn't be outside the. Oh, there he is. He has him at number four to Dallas. I thought I might have skipped by. Saw this item a moment ago because we were talking about Ezekiel Elliott. Right? And we just heard a cut from Lewis Riddick talking about Joey Bosa. Well, Louis Riddick tweeted out, he of ESPN, that he would be shocked if Ohio State running back Ezekiel Elliott was not selected in the top how many picks? How high do you think he would be, say that he would be shocked if he didn't fall in the top however many picks?
12.
Four.
What?
Four.
Who's going in the top four to get Ezekiel Elliott?
Well, maybe he feels Dallas will, right? They lost to Marco Murray, right? They don't have enough. Behind that offensive line, you put a guy that they feel, let's just play devil's advocate here is all I'm doing, that they may feel is much more talented than Darren McFadden. And boom, you get right back to that offense. You protect Tony Romo a little bit with a strong running game in 2016. They just spent a first-round pick on Melvin Gordon in San Diego last year. Can't see that happening again. I don't think they can afford to.
Unless someone tried to move up to the three spot.
Perhaps. Cleveland, you know, you'd spend a third-round pick on Duke Johnson. You have Isaiah Crowell there. I think they have so many. Although they are in, you know, Ohio. I'm not saying that that is why teams draft that way. But
Go running back at two after getting burned with Trent Richardson?
I don't think so. But it would be probably not the most unpopular selection in that state. And then Tennessee, Tony, does need a running back. I don't think they have their starting running back on their roster. Does that mean they would go that direction? Well, they might go in free agency. We don't know. Would they go running back with the number one overall
pick?
That
would be something.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
But it would shuffle the board a little bit.
Yes, it would. That would be something.
Then what happens with Tunsil? Then so many questions come to pass. That's why
these
things.
The talk about Tennessee trying to get out of that number one spot, which everybody, unless it's like Andrew Luck coming into the draft, tries to get out of that number one spot, right? It's part of the deal. With the number one overall pick, and with it being an offensive tackle this year, probably a little bit more talk about it than usual. Well, maybe there is somebody that's trying to get up there and target something, but I top four draft pick on a running back, I don't see it.
I hear what you're saying. Now, if you go back and say, well, you know what, let's say Todd Gurley had gone to the top four, right? Todd Gurley missed a bunch of games last year. He was one of only a handful of guys that
sure.
We just went through the list that produced 1,000 yards. If you can go 10th, and a lot of people have Elliott mocked to the Giants, for instance. If you can go 10th, why can't you go 5th? You know, and I'm not saying 5th because the Jags are picking there. You know, is it that big of a leap? You know, you only get one pick up there, and if you think that's the guy that's going to be the foundation piece of your offense.
Right, but it is for me.
It
right?
may be
like,
for you.
Like, that's the kind of thing where I look at it and say, I'm not convinced that Todd Gurley wasn't worth a top 5 pick when everything is said and done. I don't know if I'm in that position that I can make myself spend a top 5 pick on a running back.
But
I just don't know
now,
that I get the impact I need from a running back.
Let's say the Rams had the 5th pick in the draft last year instead of the 10th, and they took Todd Gurley with the 5th pick, and they got the exact same rookie season.
I wouldn't say it wasn't worth it.
Right. We would have said, hey, you know what? It seemed like they put faith in his knee being okay, and he paid dividends. One other item here, as Riddick also tweeted out that Elliott received a quote, ridiculous amount of praise this week for his football intelligence. Von Bell is a guy that, if you go deeper into some, you know, 2- and 3-round mock drafts, you've seen some people projecting the Jags to maybe have some interest with him with their 2nd-round pick, free safety out of Ohio State. A couple of interesting things. He did not run at the combine because he has a hamstring issue. And I'm looking at the write-up here on RotoWorld. And apparently some scouts this week, as he was quoted saying, some scouts were, quote, tearing me up a little bit over run defense in Indianapolis, right? And this was his response to the question of why he played subpar run defense. Quote, sometimes you get lazy. He apparently did not hire the best agent to prepare him for the combine. I don't know if you want to go in there saying, hey, sometimes you get lazy. Maybe sometimes I miss some tackles. Could have been in better position. I don't know. I don't know if you want to throw out there that, yeah, I was just kind of lazy sometimes. And that's the kind of guy you may get on occasion if you're going to spend a high draft pick on me. I don't know. Yes, what do you got?
Some breaking news in regards to free agency
boo.
And the Jags. The Miami Dolphins are going to place the transition tag on Olivier Vernon. What that means for fans who don't know, it's not the franchise tag. But it means that any team that negotiates with Olivier Vernon, kind of like the Mac deal a couple years ago, that the Miami Dolphins can match that offer. They get the opportunity to match whatever offer. So you're basically, if you're going to look at Vernon now, you're negotiating for Miami. The kind of contract that he's probably going to end up getting from the
possibly,
Dolphins.
Possibly, but they clearly, by putting the transition tag instead of the franchise tag, they're saying there's probably a limit to what we think he's worth here, or at least what we're willing to spend
on him. Well, the transition tag would already pay him close to 13.
12.37.
Yeah.
Is what it, so the question is, do you offer him a contract that's worth, say, $15 million a year for the first 3 years of the deal, right?
And honestly, I think Miami would match that.
And they may, in fact, do that. But, yeah. I mean, look.
I think if you figured out a way to structure it where you're paying a lot more than that up front, that they'd have to really think about it. And there are teams that are in a position where they can't. Like Jacksonville, because of how much money they have and because the big contracts they got coming are still 2 and 3 years away, like you expect Allen Hurns to get done this offseason, probably Allen Robinson next offseason, and Blake Bortles the year after that. So you're 2 years away from having to deal with Blake Bortles' contract. You can guarantee a lot of money up front in that first year for Olivia Vernon if that's the direction you wanted to go to try to price Miami out of this thing. You could do that if you wanted to, but I think Miami, by putting that transition tag on him, is basically saying if someone's willing to pay him $15 or $16 million a year, we probably are too. We just want to see what that number is going to wind up being.
The thing with him is I don't think it messes you up necessarily if you make a big offer to him and you have to wait for Miami to find out if they're going to match. What, do they get a week to decide if they're going to match
week,
it or not?
Yeah.
Right? Because how many other guys are of that ilk? You know, you wouldn't be tying up that big money offer necessarily that you'd be sending to somebody else. Are you going to give Chris Long that money at age 30? Probably not. William Hayes is age 30. I mean, I don't think he would cost anywhere near that. Jason Pierre-Paul, you're going to pay him that? You know, you're not going to.
Right.
So it makes it less likely that he becomes a Jacksonville Jaguar. I don't think it makes it 100% unlikely for them to make an offer at least.
But you can't imagine. Okay, they didn't want to put the franchise tag on him and guarantee $16 million basically this year.
Is that what it was, 16?
It's like 15.7 or something like that. But they didn't want to put that number on it, so they put the transition tag so that they can match it. But if they're going to have to pay $13 million anyway, they had to know. Like, the Dolphins have to know that the odds are, because Vernon's been the guy that's been talked about as the free agent defensive end now for 2 months, that someone's going to pay him $15, $16 million a year. And if you're not willing to do it, then why even take this step, right? It's, if you're not willing to make that kind of contract, I think it's just we want to see what the contract is actually going to be. And maybe let somebody else figure that part of it out before we have to with Olivier Vernon.
All right.
That's what it feels like to me, at least.
At least the report right now is transition tag pending for Olivier Vernon, one of the probably the premier targets for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll come back with the fan feedback spotlight asking you today who gets your vote as the top target for the Jaguars in free agency based on what we know whenever you submitted that answer. And it may have changed based on that information that Olivier Vernon looks like he is slated to get the franchise tag. We'll do that next. It's brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. The show is Jaguars Today. We're live at EverBank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. All right, final few minutes of the program here today. You know what's going to happen. There'll be a few more guys that you'd like to see the Jaguars have a free runway to at least bid on. Probably fall to some form of the tag today, transition tag, franchise tag, non-exclusive franchise tag, whatever the case may be. Jets are going to put the non-exclusive franchise tag on Mohammed Wilkerson. I don't know. I mean, the Jets are in a position to do that. That pays them $15.7 million for 1 year if they don't work out a long-term deal. And I think they'd happily take 2 first-round picks for him. You know?
I think they would, too. And it's all the questions the Jets have in free agency this year, because it's not just Wilkerson. They got their quarterback.
Right.
That's up. They got both their running backs are gone.
Wilkerson is the guy that starts that whole chain of events, though. If you can negotiate something to lower that cap figure, whereas Denver's going to put the exclusive franchise tag on Von Miller because they feel like, you know what, we can't lose Von Miller, even for 2 first-round picks. If you're picking at the end of the first round, and you could give up a late first this year and a late first next year and sign Von Miller on the dotted line, you would do that. Whereas the Jets, I think, would say, you know what? We got enough with Sheldon Richardson and Williams at defensive tackle that we can let this guy walk out for a couple of first-round picks. But I don't think you're going to see too much movement in that area. I don't think anybody's going to give up 2 first-round picks for Mohammed Wilkerson or pretty much anybody else. Who's the last guy to get that? Joey Galloway drew two first-round picks. Who was the
was it Galloway?
Who was the defensive lineman for Washington and Carolina? Who was it? Sean – oh, what was his name? Drawing a blank. I think he was one that went, I want to say, from Washington to Carolina, like in the 90s, and got – and maybe the early 2000s, and drew two first-round picks.
Sean Gilbert?
Yeah, Sean Gilbert. That's who it was. That's who it was. Drew the compensation. Not too many guys. Thank you, Tyler Devin. Excellent. Dynamite drop-in, as we like to say. All right, today's question of the day, who gets your vote as the top free agent target for the Jags in 2016? I'll give you a couple on Facebook quickly. Tony Marshall said Bruce Irvin or Malik Jackson, because Dave said last week pass rusher first, but a solid corner is on the first day list as well, second running back, offensive line. Also, Peter went with one of the Rams cornerbacks that they don't re-sign, be it Johnson or Jenkins, not as expensive as Josh Norman, but good enough players to add to the mix. Kenneth went with Bruce Irvin and added the proper hashtag. We appreciate that, Kenneth. David said Alex Mack. We don't know if he's going to make it there, but that's fine. That's your feeling that he may opt out of his deal, yet to be done. And another vote for Bruce Irvin for Daniel. What do we get on Twitter this morning?
Here's what we got from Eric. Olivier Vernon gets my vote right now. Need production and should get it with him. From Chris, going to go with Vernon. We need to get to the quarterback. Weddle, number two, for free safety. They can go either way in draft. From Irish Jaguar, Olivier Vernon. From Duval Doom, all of them. Win games, damn it. From Ryan, Tashawn Gibson at free safety, 25 years old, 14 career picks, young, productive, fits a need. And from Black Dog, I like Matt Forte or Olivier Vernon, hashtag Duval side of the moon.
Just don't see Forte, as we discussed, being the right guy. I would take him. I still think he's got some game.
I would, too. And talking about Vernon here with the transition tag getting placed on him and the Dolphins putting that transition tag, $13 million puts them in a bit of a spot. They're getting close to their cap number, especially with you still have to sign your draft picks. Like, you have to have enough money to go do everything else you need to do during an offseason, so you can't just sign Vernon to whatever contract you want. The problem they're having is Cameron Wake is right around $8.5 million this year, but that's not guaranteed. I think they'd have $1.5 or something like that in dead money if they decided to cut Wake. I know they talked about trying to renegotiate with him a couple weeks ago. That was a story. He's 34 years old coming off an Achilles injury.
Right.
So who knows what they're going to do with him. The big issue they have is Ndamukong Suh and trying to figure out what to do with that stupid contract they gave him last year. He is a $23.5 million base in 2016.
That's fully, not even the cap hit.
Yeah, fully guaranteed base salary of $23.5 million this year. His cap hit is $28.6 this year for Sue. And I know there was a story a month and a half ago where they were trying to figure out some way, like they do with like the contracts with quarterbacks all the time, where they push back that money, where it's still guaranteed they're going to get every cent of that money, but they push back that money to create some flexibility in what they're doing with the cap right now. I know that was a story a month and a half ago, but haven't heard anything else about it coming out of Miami since. Because of it, they're really in a tough spot here, and there is the potential that a team can come in and make enough of an offer with upfront money for Olivier Vernon that there's a chance Miami just couldn't match it.
Right.
Just couldn't do it because they don't have the money available to them to go make, you know, if you are going to say it's 16, 17, 18 million in that first year for Vernon, I'm not sure Miami can do it. I'm just not sure they can get to that kind of money, and maybe a little bit less in years two and three if that's what you want to do to kind of get him out of Miami and get you to a team. So the door is still open for teams that want to go and try to get Olivier Vernon, but that's the situation Miami's in right now.
Transition tag certainly keeps the door open. I think franchise tag eliminates the Jaguars for considering.
Yeah, you're not giving up.
For considering, Tony.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're not even getting into. I don't think you want to get in a situation where you're giving up anything, even if you negotiate that. That's the starting point. You're free to negotiate with the team on the compensation, but if they don't bend, and they say, no, we're sticking to it, you have to give up two first-round picks. I mean, I don't think the Jags would want to give up that kind of contract and a third-round pick to the Miami Dolphins, for instance.
No.
You know, so if any compensation has to go their way, I don't think it's happening.
The question becomes, is it worth it to you to go get Olivier Vernon if it means you have to guarantee, say, $18 million in his first year?
They certainly are in a position to do it.
They can do it if they want to.
And it depends on how you want to restructure the rest of the contract. I still think that doesn't cripple them. Imagine if they went in this year with $60 million in cap space. We'd say, oh, they're fine, right? They have $60 million in cap space. They're not going to spend it all. They'll have money left over. They'll bring some of these guys. They'll negotiate long-term deals with their up-and-comers. They'll have plenty of room. Well, you got an extra $20 million, basically. Go dump it on Olivier Vernon. I'm okay with that.
And the Dolphins did this last year, too, with Charles Clay, and he walked. They put the transition tag on Clay. He got the contract offer from Buffalo. Miami didn't want to match it. They wind up signing Jordan Cameron. Or is it Cameron Jordan?
Jordan Cameron.
The tight end version of the Cameron Jordan combination. And that wound up being their tight end this year. But they placed the transition tag and let the guy walk on that last year. So maybe they're just in a similar spot because of how much money they're spending on Sue that they just can't match it. But they don't want to be the team that just lets them walk either. Maybe it's that kind of situation right now for Miami.
Right. At least they feel like, all right, we've got somewhat of control over this. Maybe this will scare teams off. We'll pay him this for 1 year. If we have to, and then figure it out from that point forward or try to work out a long-term deal. One guy who, and we've got to end it, but Tony, we focus so much on the defensive side of the football, and as some of these guys start to get taken off the market, for instance, Von Miller gets done, and let's say they work out, or it gets franchised, and they work out a long-term deal with Malik Jackson. Let's say, for instance, if that were to happen, you know, and if some of your targets start to disappear, you've got all this cap space, how about Kelechi Osemele? The guard from the Baltimore Ravens, right? Pro Bowl caliber player, can play guard and tackle, is a massive, powerful guy, 330 pounds, only 26 years old. Yeah, he's going to want some good cash. All right, we want some good players, and he is one. And you plug him in there, and you have Cannor Linder at the guard and center spots on the right side, however they go. All right, open the season with Jokel. You've got a built-in insurance policy because Osemele has played both guard and tackle, and I think that would significantly upgrade their run blocking on this football team. So I got no problem, and maybe that's going to be where we focus so much on defense. And I do believe they'll spend on defense, but if they're drafting all defense, they've got to plug some holes on the offensive line in a running back spot through free agency. So we'll see if they're able to do just that. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey wrapping things up today for Jaguars today. Coming up next, though, XL Primetime. Stick around here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!